This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. Joyce Goh, Tan Chung Han, and myself, Sharad Kutin, with the top business stories. Now, back to the story, as we call it, the story that keeps on giving. 1MDB, US investigators are looking into the 1MDB case, are apparently facing a hurdle. Witnesses are keeping mum out of fear.
So this is according to a court filing by the FBI. It was filed in L.A.
That's the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation.
That's right, FBI. So this story actually was just released about an hour or so ago this morning. So, you know, with the FBI trying to, well, we do know that the investigations, at least on the part of the DOJ, has gone from civil to criminal. And as part of these ongoing investigations, looks like the FBI is facing a roadblock here. Their witnesses are apparently too scared to talk. And they quote some people in certain foreign countries, plural, are concerned for their safety. And they're saying it might be a bit too dangerous to cooperate.
It's becoming like a movie script, this whole thing. Yeah. And basically,
I know at least one movie company that could be turning that into reality. Maybe even an Oscar nominee.
Maybe. If they're still around. Yeah.
Right. So basically, the FBI cited Malaysian news reports of local officials who have been arrested because of their perpetrated role in investigating the 1MDB whole case about that. So it looks like this whole thing is expanding and yet it is stuck. So, yeah.
And adding to the dramatic element of this story, right, according to this court filing, you know, the FBI even cited the case whereby the driver of former Malaysian AG, Attorney General Abdul Ghani Patel, remember he was shot and wounded? Yeah, so that was included in the filing as well, adding to this really, really complex storyline and the dramatic elements to this ongoing 1MDB saga.
And of course, one layer of it is that in 6 days, the Prime Minister will be in Washington meeting with President Donald Trump. And how this is going to play in the American press, I think, is also a fascinating part of the saga.
The story that keeps on giving.
Now, Bank Negara will introduce regulations that allow for electronic Know Your Customer or KYC features. The central bank plans to finalize the standards by next month before rolling it out in 2018.
Right. So Bank Negara has been in talks with the industry, like the bankers and the banking players. And the additional rules will enable an industry-wide implementation of the EKCY for remittance transactions in the country. So this is an essential part of banking to prevent money laundering and terrorist funding activities. This whole part and parcel of knowing your customer, right? So this EKYC is an electronic and paperless method of doing, you know, via like mobile app and all that. And they feel that it's a necessary way, you know, to transform from a cash-based society into a cashless one.
Now, when I heard about this proposal, at least according to the story in the front page of Starbiz today, you know, alarm bells just started going off in my head, right? Because, you know, are these KYC processes, and these are just absolutely crucial, right? Is this something you want to liberalize, you know, at least, you know, in the digital sense? Because if you look at the KYC lapses when it comes to the financial transactions, you know, involving 1MDB, here we go, 1MDB again, you know, be it in Malaysia or what happened in Singapore or around the world, you know, Swiss, you know, you're looking at these serious money laundering allegations as well, you know, being aimed at Australia's largest bank, the Commonwealth Bank of Australia, right? So makes you wonder, though, should we really be making these processes easier? You know, is moving this process online a proper substitute for, say, face-to-face interaction, or good old, you know, the good old five senses, right?
Yeah, maybe it helps the banks too. There are certain things like that, because technology is so advanced right now. So maybe it's easier for banks to know their customer, look at their digital footprint. Maybe there are other ways of knowing your customer online in the whole World Wide Web that we can't see physically. Like anyone can just rock up.
In fact, it might even be better, because you think about what the face-to-face does, right? It also opens up opportunities for some sort of inducements being given to the bank, someone on the banking side, to let something go, right? I mean, there's no reason why, in fact...
Yeah, maybe, yeah. Between you and me, physically.
Right?
Yeah,
no, but
right,
you can make those inducements online as well.
Well, it's harder. There's an electronic trail. And what's interesting, I do know some financial institutions, for instance, when you look for a loan, they do list the kind of professions they don't want. They kind of profile against professions, right? So I think if you're selling illegal VCDs, you don't get to get a bank loan for a housing loan.
But this illegal VCDs, that's like throwback to the 90s, man. But this, are those even still a thing?
Yeah, yes, they're available, perhaps, but I don't still, know.
Yeah,
but
not that we're condoning
towns,
it,
Sharad. Like Klang.
Oh, who's the one with the low-hanging fruit now? Anyways, but I guess fundamentally here, and the question is, you know, if you're meeting these potential clients, or these potential clients, would you be as trusting of them if you just met them online?
But this whole thing, it's been introduced in Thailand. Mm. It's also in developed countries such as the US, UK and Australia. And you can see that other things on this whole eKYC thing, right? It also includes video calls and geocoding to verify your client's identity, like, or using online channels to do that. So because of technology, there could be ways to do that. Yes, there might be this whole cybersecurity thing that could be like, do you trust it, viruses and all that. But then again, maybe with technology, it will also help banks to really know their customer.
I mean, also keeping in mind, you know, I mean, fine, I get the ease of it. I get that argument. But you balance that against the rising number of fraud that's happening in the online space. Apparently, fraud cases detected in cyberspace here in Malaysia have jumped, 20% on year last year? Like, so in 2016, it was 20% more than what we saw in 2015. So, you know, given the kind of backdrop, you know, is really moving these KYC processes onto the digital sphere a wise move?
Okay, speaking of consumers, will the Malaysian consumer keep on spending? Maybe not as much, and that's according to a research firm, a Retail Group Malaysia, RGM, has once again downgraded their forecast for full-year retail sales.
That's right. So RGM has downgraded for the second time their full-year forecast for retail sales here in Malaysia for 2017. The number to add to that is 3.7%. versus the previous 3.9%. You've got this quote here from RGM's managing director, Tan Hai Sin, who, for the record, has been on The Breakfast Grill just back in July. You can check out the podcast there. And he says this, and I quote, "For the rest of this year, the rise of our purchasing power will continue to fall behind the increase in prices in retail goods." So that outlook for the second half of this year stands in stark contrast to what we saw in the second quarter of this year. Retail sales actually grew by almost 5% on year, and much of that is due to the spending in the lead up to Hari Raya, which happened at the end of the second quarter.
Okay, we spoke to Muhammad Afiz Nizam Abdul Rashid, chief economist at Bank Islam, and he gave his outlook on domestic consumer spending.
Early of the year, I think most economists were very pessimistic, and especially in regards to consumer spending. And this is in relation to what we saw in the consumer sentiment index. It has been below 100 points for, I think, 12 quarters in a row. So that essentially set the tone when we do our outlook in the early of the year. So apparently we saw the sharp rise in terms of consumer spending, 7.1% in the second quarter, really took us by surprise. So I think that's the kicker for the first half of the economy. So I think because of that, I think most economists have started to revise their outlook on the GDP growth for 2017. So I think coming from a pessimism, and suddenly we turn to somewhat optimist about the future outlook on the economy, that's actually premised on the consumer spending.
And that was Dr. Muhammad Afaz Nizam Abdul Rashid, Chief Economist at Bank Islam Malaysia, speaking about their outlook for domestic consumer spending.
Yeah, and going back to RGM's outlook here, you know, note that their data does not include big ticket items like cars, like property, you know, and or even tourist numbers, right? Because if you want to perhaps get a broader view of the state of consumer spending here in Malaysia, look at new vehicle sales. All right, it's actually up year to date is at 4.7%. Sorry, 4.7% more compared to the first 7 months of 2016. Also, when you look at the TIV, total industry volume, at least the forecast for this year's TIV. That's expected to go above 600,000 units again. You know? So there is that resilience or that rebound in consumer spending.
Right, and also at latest Bank Negara statistics, it shows that the applications and approval rates for purchase of passenger cars and residential commercial properties are both up. So like loans applied for passenger cabs, it is up 20% year on year to 6.55 billion. Loans applied for residential property is up 27% year on year.
I mean, the exclusion of these two items in that picture that RGM gives, is it because these are kind of staples? These are kind of necessary for life. It is the other spending that's, you know, that you might cut back on. The bed sheets or the external travel or the luxury items or, you know, and other kinds of consumer items.
Speaking about external travel, MAHB shows, the data shows that domestic traffic improved 2.9% to 6 million passengers compared with July last year. So even traveling, maybe Chitty Chitty Malaysia,
or,
I don't know.
Or maybe just your business dealings in different parts of Malaysia, right?
Yeah, people find...
Again, kind of necessities, right? As opposed to those things that you can squeeze on or tighten your belt over.
Right, you know, yeah, but at the same time, you could also argue that perhaps the traditional brick-and-mortar retail outlets are facing disruption as well. I wonder how much is that digital disruption being factored into RGM's numbers. But again, you know, according to Mohammad Afzal Nizam, looks like consumer spending appears to be resilient for the second half of this year.
Okay, we're coming up to the top of the hour news. And after that, we'll have the Breakfast Grill. Our guest this morning, Guy Silva, Managing Director of JTI Malaysia, that's Japan Tobacco International. Han, you're going to be speaking to him. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.